Okay, so here's this quick little clip I found like an hour ago before recording. We're gonna pop it in right here.
What do you think about personality hires?
I think personality hires are good in the office. Gotta have some of them.
But like, do you ever hire people just because of their personality?
Well, as a recruiter, I interview a lot of people that are personality hires, and not all of them get hired.
But they're important, right?
They're an important component of the office, yes.
Do you think they're more important than people that do the actual work?
Depends on what the company does, but I would have to say yes.
They're more important?
No, they're not really more important.
But who's going to build company culture?
The personality hires.
That's what I thought.
Okay, so how do we feel about that? Personality hires to create culture? Work culture? Mm-hmm. Is
yeah,
that crazy?
So Andrew, you sent that over, and then I was like, my husband is working from home today. Let me go upstairs and ask him.
And he does recruiting. Like,
he does recruiting for 13 years. Yeah, for 13 years.
That's what he's doing.
And multiple companies. And so I asked him, I was like, what's your take on personality hires? And he's like, yeah, there are things called hard skills and soft skills. And the softer skills, which is the personalities of people, is harder to teach people. You can usually teach them the coding, the miscellaneous things, but that personality needs to be, it's important, but you also can't 100% hire on the personality, because you don't want someone, if you're hiring someone and you're like, this person and I are in step, we know exactly what we want. We are two brains, two peas in a pod. You are actually creating more problems for your company, because you need my husband defined as thought diversity. Thought diversity means
these words. This sounds great.
Yeah, 13 years of recruiting and on his skill set. Thought diversity, because you need to bring in other people's opinions and you need to have other thoughts. You can't have just yes men, people who will just agree with you. So in terms of personality hires, they're great. You can't teach extrovert. You can teach coding, but you also have to realize that there has to be a variance of butting heads at companies, and everyone shouldn't always agree with you. So as long as you approach your team as we should butt heads, we should have conversations, we should have discussions and little arguments about why or yes, or lean into experimenting. I think that's always a great way to like think of your company culture and how it can expand.
I'm looking forward to butting heads more and more, because it's productive. This is perfect. Great. I think that was permission. I think
permission to do that. Head.
No, what I thought was funny. One, I found this on TikTok, which I think is also interesting. It's I always say this, but all content starts at TikTok, just like all homes start here at the Builder Show. Same type of thing. It just makes it way out elsewhere. Instant Reels and all this stuff. There was this comment on there. I'm like, this is so funny. It's like, I prefer to call myself a Riz worker. And if you don't know what that means, you either need kids that are in middle school or you need to go on the internet more. So I thought that was, I'm like, oh, that's like the Gen Z way of saying personality hire. Personality hire, a bit more politically correct, I guess, to say that way. But I think there's a lot of truth to that, especially in an office setting. I'll take that back. Maybe even more important when we are a distributed workforce or remote, because it can be hard to show your personality through Zoom. So it's almost, I don't say you're acting, but like you have to make sure, like here I'm using my hands more, like someone who's maybe a bit more reserved personality, not that there's anything wrong with that. They're just less extroverted with how they express themselves. You might be like, man, it's really dead here. Imagine you get hired somewhere and everyone's like very even keeled and kind of reserved. You're like, this is the most boring job of my life. Like, what is going on? Like, when we talk to each other, like, it's terrible. Someone could come in and kind of spark energy and motivation and excitement for what you're doing. Productivity goes up. So it's like, if that person's less productive, but they make other people, let's quantify it, 5, 10, 15, 20% more productive.
Yeah.
If they're only 50% productive in total, you're still more productive. There we go. So let's quantify it. So I say, yes, I think it makes sense. I think we do it unknowingly.
Yeah, I say it depends on the position too. I mean, you don't want your air traffic controller to be a personality hire, or your brain surgeon to be a personality hire. So it depends on exactly what skills are required. And I think Jackie's right on the money. You need a mix.
You need a mix.
Both. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if your culture needs it, then yeah, it's probably worth it. But if you already have a bunch, then you know, you need a little bit of everything.
Thought diversity. That is the word of the month.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think Beth had one the other day on a call.
Now, anytime we're getting in an argument at like in at any company, just
butting heads. There we go.
Thought diversity.
Yes.
It's great. We're at home. You can't decide what to eat. Like, I appreciate the thought diversity here, but if we can make a freaking decision, that'd be really great.
Thought diversity with your
spouse. I can just see it. This is now the buzzword of like the quarter for a lot of people. So take it and run with it in your company.
We could thank Jackie.
Perfect.
You brought it to us. You brought it to us. So let's get it started.
Welcome to Market Proof Marketing, the podcast from the industry leaders at Do You Convert, where we talk about the current and future state of marketing and online sales for builders and developers across the globe. We're not here to sell you. We're here to help you and to try and elevate the conversation. Is there a topic you'd like us to cover or a question you'd like us to answer? We'll do it. Simply send an email to show@doyouconvert.com.
This is episode 332. Wow, that's a lot of episodes. I am the self-proclaimed ad doctor. I wrote and signed my own certificate, Andrew Peake. And with me today is Julie Jonigan and Jackie Lipinski.
Hello.
Hello.
We are here. We are here. We are officially done car shopping at the Peake household down in Florida. Good. I'm so over it.
I hate car shopping.
It's and you know, the novelty wears off. That's why I have a see. I will say I am enjoying it's been 3 days now. I got a Tesla Y performance. It's stupid fast. It makes no sense. But then you get used to it. You're like, oh, it just is what it is. But the interesting part is this is my story. So my oldest, he is in sixth grade. He's 11. The next one down, he's in second grade. They all know what Tesla is. Like Tesla has brand power. High school, middle school, elementary school. Does Jeep, Dodge, Ford, Chevy, GM, Volvo, definitely not Volvo, VW, Audi, no. Lamborghini, yeah, but that's, you know, those are like, as like a boy growing up, you're like, I want a Lamborghini. Oh my gosh, look at that car. Like, so the exotic cars are there, but Tesla is attainable by most people. And it has so much brand power recognition. And I think it's influencer marketing, whether intentional or not. So the car itself is super cool. It's, you know, it's, I don't know the stats on this, but like what car company has the market share and value that's been newly created? I don't think there's really anything that's up there. Rivian's catching on, but Tesla has the brand power. So I took the kids to school the other day because like, Dad, can you take me to school? We want to show off the Tesla. I pull in the parking lot and here's the competition. There's one of the Bentley SUVs pulling as well. I don't even know what it is, but I know it's 200K plus. A Ferrari, a red Ferrari next to me. Then BMW M6, like cars that are easily 2, 3, 4, 5 times the cost. What are the kids excited over? The silly Tesla I got. That's like kind of in the middle budget price range. Like Carson, my oldest, he's like, hey, he told all his friends on Fortnite the night before. So here's like 6 kids coming to the car line to look at my car, which isn't, I mean, it looks neat, but there's a Ferrari, like 2 cars in front. There's a Bentley that's $250,000. So is this, to me, it's brand and influencer marketing. Like all the YouTubers they watch and they've been watching for years do Tesla.
Do you also feel validated in your decision?
Maybe invalidated, right? I don't know.
I always thought the kids loving it. You're like,
no, I was being a smart butt there, but
yeah.
No, I mean, I think it's a great choice for us and how we function with them. I was like, okay, like all the kids think this is cool, but they're 11 and 12. Like, is that. Is that who I should be like basing my decision off of? But I mean, I think they're right for a reason. The experience has been great as far as buying and all that. I will now go into like, well, how's the support if I do need anything? Mm-hmm. But it's just so interesting that like I'm recognizing like, oh, that's brand and combined with influencer marketing. Every YouTuber that they watch has a Tesla or like Mr. Beast. He gives away Teslas. He doesn't give away Jeep Wrangler Unlimiteds with the lift kit. Like he's not giving away a Dodge Charger, not a Ford Mustang Mach 5, like all these cars that they're trying to push. It's Tesla because that's what people think is cool. Like that's the cool car.
I think it's going back to that Seth Godin purple cow too. More people, when they buy a Tesla, they talk about it because there is something different that stands out from it. Cause it's, it's different than what they're used to. You've been talking about how you're going to plug it in. I don't know. I'm not a Tesla person, we all know that, you know, who else has one on the team.
Here's
so I think that's part of
card.
It too, is that yeah, it's different enough. The product is different enough that it makes people have something to talk about.
Ooh, that's good. The product is different enough to give something, give people something to talk about. That's, I feel like that's genius. That and thought, diversity. Like as far as like a builder, if they're like, what can we do? What can we do? We're trying to build brand. It's not just impressions. It's not just pretty colors. It's give them something. Isn't that a song? Insert that song right here. Let's give them something to talk about. That one. There we go. Okay, I'm done. I'll keep going. This is my third one. It's not. This is. I'm not even like halfway done. I'm
drinking. For people just listening to the podcast, that was a Monster drink.
Yeah. Brought to you by Monster Energy Ultraviolet. It's my favorite one. Who's up next?
I feel like Julie and I, how do we never talk and we're always on par with each other. But
our Riz workers right here. Yeah. Come on.
I'll go first because mine's really short and it relates to yours. But I got an ad targeted to me yesterday on Instagram and it, you know, like anything, it goes by in a second. And I went, what? And I swiped back because the image just seemed off. So I screenshotted it and I was like, what is it? It is for, because I have a 4-year-old son now, Paw Patrol live event. And the guy's face looks weird. He has three fingers. The people in the background don't have faces. Their eyes aren't. So I was like, wow, this is a completely generated AI image that at first glance, something just felt wrong. And it reminded me, Julia, of that. Do you guys see it's like March 4th, the Willy Wonka experience?
This is terrifying.
Did you see what that was though? It was an AI generated images promoted this event. People showed up to the event and it was like duct taped shower curtain event. It was just absolute bait and switch. And so now knowing that story and seeing an event that is also putting a great, I thought like, oh, that doesn't look weird image up. But now I feel like I would be bait and switched. Like, I feel like that they have set the expectations high. And now knowing that when companies have tried to use a strategy before, it almost always ends in like disappointment. It just makes me feel like it feels scammy to me using AI generated art in ads.
So I had to look up that Willy Wonka experience.
Do like, it. First of all, you can link to it. It's
the parents that took their kids did not watch the movie, right?
Yeah, because you're not getting them back at the end.
Right? You don't get them in the back. Or maybe they did watch the movie.
They end up in the alley in the back.
Kids have been bad.
That footage is crazy. But that picture, it's like, that is a real event?
That is a real event. And then if you look at the promotions the that case. Were for it, it was very magical, very beautiful. So it's just an AI fail, I think, in terms of you're setting expectations too high.
It's crazy.
Potentially. And you can't back it up. You know, it's Fyre Festival, you know, 7.0 of terms of using the highlights and promotional to forward without having potential context behind it. So interested to see when that event actually does come out. But for me, it was a total AI ad failure for making me feel confident in buying tickets for an event.
Well, and I was going to say, you said the other photos are good. This one to be AI, it's like, I don't know. I would expect it to be even better than what they came
the
Willy up
Wonka
with.
One, or are you talking about the Paw Patrol picture?
The Paw Patrol
it's scary.
One.
Yeah. I'm like, how did this get approved? It'll be in the show notes if anyone wants to laugh at a really poorly. I hope I get them viral because it's bad.
That's great. I want to make you viral. What do you got, Julie? Or did I already forget? You didn't go yet. No.
So mine is also an AI fail, but I don't know if you'll remember last podcast I was on.
Let's see.
I was like, okay, Kindle has something in beta where I can have my book, Building Certainty, created into an audiobook by AI. And so we talked about the pros and cons of it on the podcast. And Kevin's like, just go do it and like tell us how it is. So I went to go do it. The voices were decent. You know, there were a couple voices that were fine, good enough to work. You know, a lot of them were like British accent. So like to find a normal one that was good, you probably had like 10 or 12 choices. And so there's probably like two or three that you would actually use. So did that. It was fine. You can actually go in. It does the whole book. You go in and you start listening. Well, it misspelled my name or it mispronounces my name. So you would have to go in and like phonetically type in how the AI should say it. And like, as you go through, you would have to, they kept calling content content. So I had to go through and make it change all of that. So that was taking a little time. Then I realized that there was no way for me to take out. I have a very long table of contents because it's almost like an index at the beginning of the book. So people can get around. There is no way for me to have it skip the table of contents. So to do it, because it pulls straight from the Kindle. So the only way for me to do it is if it sits there and reads you that entire like four pages of tables of contents, unless I go in and revise the book that's already published on there and then go back in. So just another thing to say, like, it sounds easy and like, yay, I'm going to go in there and hit a few buttons. I would have had to go through the whole book to fix anything that was weird. It was not going to be very time efficient. So we'll see. Maybe it's still in beta. So maybe they'll like fix it and make it better, but it didn't happen because once I got in there, as with a lot of AI things, it wasn't as simple as it seems.
So it just didn't release at all. Cause you were like, this is not up to what you wanted.
No, because, well, I still could do it, but it's just going to take time because I'm going to have to listen to it, read the entire book back to me and fix everything that's wrong. Unless I feel okay about letting it say the wrong thing through the whole thing, which I'm not.
I was going to say, I don't think you would do that.
And people are going to, I don't want people to pay for it and then be halfway through the table of contents and be like, what?
What is happening?
Is this? So like, it's not quality enough. To do that unless I can get it how I want it, which would be very time consuming. So that's my update. AI fail. It wasn't as great as I had hoped. Maybe someday.
Maybe someday. That's interesting. Content versus content. Like it needed the context.
How did they pronounce your name wrong?
Jarnagin.
Oh, Jarnagin.
Instead of Jarnagin. Mispronounce. I can't remember. It mispronounced some other weird things that you have to go in there and then figure out how to type it phonetically that it would understand you know? So it'd sometimes take a couple tries for me to be like, make it say it right.
So now do you feel like it'd be easy? You're just like, all right, I'm going to just do this on my own. Or are you still like, I mean, I think the easiest way to digest your book is with a notebook and a pen.
Yeah.
Like
for now, it's going to stay ebook and paperback book. And we'll see. Maybe in the future, it'll be audiobook, but not yet. So sorry. I tried.
There are certain books that need to be audiobooks and certain books you're just like, I need to write on this actual physical book. And yours is definitely one of those for stuff. So, well, thanks for trying. I kind of want to hear the messed up version, but also don't do that to us.
Yeah, agreed. Well, let's go on to the news. Actually, summit. Let's talk about the summit. Let's go. Are we sold out already? When this is published,
I'm just kidding.
I don't know. We're up there.
We don't know yet.
Let's see. The tickets went live yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And it went VIP like a week or so before that. So they went live yesterday, right after this is posted.
Every time we'd be in a meeting with Olivia, it'd be like ding, 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 ding. It was so much fun. So. Yeah.
She's remember we used to do that live, like we'd go live on Facebook, like when they went live.
Yeah.
And that was like, we'll talk like about
the
pressure.
People who pull the lottery tickets. We'd be like, yes, and another, you know, tickets. Like, here's your number.
Go and go. So hopefully there's a few left when this went live. Right.
Yeah. So if you want tickets, go now to go, go
like,
get your tickets.
As you're listening to this, hopefully it's not like a month after and you're like, oh yeah, I really want to go.
Yeah.
Probably sold out.
We usually do a wait list. There's always like two or three people who are like, oh, it's my kid's dance recital or something comes up last minute. But mostly it's people who go. And like, we hear such good feedback from it too. So I'm excited to see what.
And I think this sounds salesy, but I think the reason to kind of like have some urgency with it is then you could get into the hotel block or the, I think we're working on a alternative hotel block as well. And then you're not Ubering anywhere, which could save. Yeah. I mean, I don't know, or you could walk if you get somewhere close, but you might be paying more per room. That could be quite a bit of savings just on like travel logistics, nothing to do with our cost. So I think that's the reason to it. It's so much easier. Just go downstairs.
And those hallway conversations are sometimes the best, like value, like what you really get out of it is just the people you end up seeing in the lobby and sitting there and talking to. So it's nice always to be with everybody else.
You can really go sit in the lobby and like, oh, look, there's this person, like after, you know, for like a few hours or so before or after.
Yeah.
And much easier to do then.
we love being the matchmakers. We're like, you have a problem? This is the builder to talk to. That builder has already gone through this.
So. Apologies in advance to those that we send everyone to. Yeah. Like, go see her, go see him. Perfect.
Perfect.
Perfect. Perfect. All right. And then now onto the news, the great compression. This one's from New York Times. This is a long one.
This was a long one. We had a few long ones today.
How do we feel about it? Expected.
Do you want to give a quick summary of what it is?
Essentially, it is the downsizing of homes based on affordability.
Mm-hmm.
That's like the diet AI version, like summarize this article. Due to the affordability, people are moving into smaller homes. Builders are adapting and building smaller homes.
This one is specifically towards really small homes. So like under 500 square feet is what this article is kind of focused on, a neighborhood that has homes that are under 500 square feet.
Mm-hmm. And talks about townhouses and different products. And from what we've seen and what I've seen, the builders who kind of saw this writing on the wall years ago of, oh, affordability might be an issue, we're going to roll out another product line to address this before our competitors, they're still really winning. You know, I'll have calls with builders who have that, and they're like, everything else is struggling, but those products just are being swept out of the availability as soon as they come on the market. So there is a need for them. There is a demand for them. And it just talks about, you know, I think everyone loves the American dream of owning a house, and at the end of the day, you know, your rent's either going to someone else or you own a house and it's just slightly smaller, but you have that money. And I think that's what a lot of people see value in, is the ownership element. So just, even if it's smaller, people are willing to compromise. So it's kind of the
build the equity.
I think a lot of people automatically think of first-time home buyers when they think about this kind of smaller home community, but the article talks about it's a lot of different demographic. I mean, there are first-time home buyers. The first person they focused on, he had owned homes in the past and came back to the area and was kind of outpriced. He was like an older single person.
This is my only gripe on the article. I'll save it till after you're done. But this is
There was another example where they were talking about who was living there, and it was how many people had been divorced. So I think it was a lot of single people, which makes sense because it's a little bitty house. So we had this once at Idle Homes. We had what we thought was going to be an active adult community, but it wasn't age restricted. And we did like a focus group with the homeowners. They were all single women, like every single one. So we had been trying to market towards, you know, active adult age couples, and it ended up being a lot of single women because it was gated and it was low maintenance. So I think sometimes you have to remember, sometimes what we think our demographic isn't necessarily going to be our demographic. So.
Yeah, I think as far as like renting versus owning, and then what these communities could provide, these homes could provide compared to renting, is like you mentioned, single women. I don't know if a larger portion of that was like single mothers, but then you look into like security, like this is my home. I am secure in my home. It's stability. This is still my home. Gate, my home. So that fits all those things. What I wish they would have had some influence on, someone could have paid someone off. I think it would have been great. I would have contributed to that. Julie mentioned in this community, there are divorced and really divorced. And I'm like, oh yeah, if you have 400 square feet, you're not having the kids for a week. Like that's not working out. Yep. Mm. You don't have a room because it's not set up for that. Mm-hmm. And so then it kind of, to me, on purpose or not on purpose, I don't know, cast this in this kind of like sacrificial, I'm making a sacrifice to live here. Something bad happened and now I have to go to this tiny home. It's all I can afford, versus, hey, this actually creates opportunity for those who are renting. Instead of losing 100% of what they rent, now they have their mortgage, they have the interest, so they have the cost of financing. Well, that's a lot less than 100% loss every single month that you're paying someone else. So to me, it should have been like, I wished it would have been, here is this either single woman, single man, couple, not couple, whatever situation, but like, just like, they're trying to get started, but maybe not start a home, or hey, they rented forever, or an older person who's just rented because that's what they've done. Now they could afford this home. Now that's their home. There's the home ownership pride and they're building equity. But it started off with the story of Mr. Lanter, who is recently divorced, came back to Central Oregon from a condo in Portland.
Yeah.
Sounds like a sitcom or something, actually.
I think I've told this story before, but I had friends who they were a young married couple. And you're right. Sometimes people just want to get their foot in the door. They bought such a small house that they had a fake Christmas tree. Their house had so little storage that Christmas tree lived in the trunk of their car for 2 years.
It's amazing.
Which to me, I was like, throw the tree away.
I'd get a wreath or something. I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But there are sacrifices you do in terms of storage or some kind of element where you just, you know, you want to have that foot in the door. You know the value or no value of renting, and you just want to make sure you you have that little part. But yeah, you're right, Andrew. There is always going to be a sacrifice potentially associated with that, or it's not a sacrifice, and you're right. They're like, this is exactly what I've been looking for.
Yeah,
with everything that's happening, so.
Other thing it talked a little bit about is we have to have cities on board to let us build these smaller homes too, because sometimes that's a problem. What you can come in and build, you have to build it at a certain square footage. We also had the issue with one, it was a smaller area, like a smaller town, not the larger cities that we built in. And we were building like a 2-bedroom, 900 square foot, 1-car garage. Well, they couldn't appraise it because they said this isn't like a real house that we can appraise because nothing else was that size. So there are unique things that builders have to figure out when they're building a different unique product like this. But it doesn't even necessarily though have to be a 400 square foot home. It can also just be stripping down your homes or building them more affordably. So that we can get down in those lower price points for affordability. Yeah. So it's not, this is one option of others that we could go to.
Yeah. Home site size. So increased density, like, back when we had some drama with our little community here, we looked at the prior submitted, development plans to the city, and they went from 65 foot lots to 60 to 50, and then ultimately 40 foot. Which I was happy with. Like, I don't want to mow a yard. We don't need a yard. We got like the kids play in the street. We go here, we go there, like we get out. So that's another way of compressing, you know, 40 foot times, you know, 20 houses. That's a lot more houses compared to 65 times. You may get like 12 or something compared to 40. So that's another way to make things more affordable. And this was back in 2018, actually 2017 into 2018 that the plans were submitted. So it was already happening there. And it sold very quickly for us, for our area, with the compressed size. All right, on to the next one from Redfin. The typical household earns roughly $30,000 less than needed to afford the median priced home, but that's an improvement from last year.
I think this goes exactly with the last article, right? It's about you have to have that product for affordability. And in some areas, you know, that might be, hey, $30,000, you know, that's someone's job. So if someone else wants to obtain that, and maybe, you know, we're talking about millennials need to buy houses and, but they need boomer money. Maybe boomers want to downsize, but what does that look like? You know, multi-generational living floor plan options, even as if people do need three people in a house, like, do we have an option for that person? So it might be that product of, maybe we can create a smaller house, or maybe we can create the house with extra features that can get them to that attainability problem. Because it's, I'm sure as you see, like it's, you know, we're seeing it's hard to just be like $30,000, please. From your 100%. Box, like,
so. Especially the options. I'm not sure how popular they are when they actually are offered, but for us, like we had the option to convert. It was actually my office and the setup here. This would have been like a mother-in-law suite. Like there's a bathroom right in front of me. It would have been a full bath. But it was almost $7,000 to change that over. It was and we were like, ooh, let's do that. And I'm like, oh, $7,000. Yeah. Like they said, told us that at like the model home walkthrough, like, oh yeah, this is an option. Oh, cool. I'm like, how much is it? Well, I'm not sure. You know, they have the specifics. It can adjust. So we try not to remember the details, but just because it might change. Makes sense. I'm like, ooh, $7,000. Like we could get a lot more other things for $7,000. So like we would have done it not for affordability, but just to make it easier if someone wants to visit. They could have the whole downstairs to themselves, but the pricing on it was not affordable. So if the play is to make it affordable, which then should have a incremental lift in sales, I would assume, if we have homes that could have multi-generation, I would say maybe that option should be in the spirit of the change or the option, yeah. Like, which would be, hey, let's make this affordable. Maybe that doesn't have to be a profit center, or if it truly is that much more expensive for this, I don't know how it would have been because the bath is right there, like next to it. I don't know. It seemed pricey for what the change was.
Do you regret it now?
A little bit. I mean, mm-hmm. I could make the change now. The hard part is it would have had a different door set up with the garage door. Like, so that's like structurally difficult to change after the fact, but it's not like it would have been, for understand, not more, significantly more materials, I guess, in that section. Changing the bathroom, we've had multiple neighbors do that already because they just, you can't see my office and you have no interest in seeing what it looks like over here, but it's super easy to change right there. Just knock the walls down. But yeah, I kind of regret it.
Okay. I thought it was okay. Interesting that it says February 2021 was the last month on record when the typical household earned more than needed to afford the median priced home. So then in February 2021, the median household income was 69,000 something. And that was higher than the 65,000 needed to afford a typical home. Then this says that it's the annual income needed now is like 113,000 to afford the typical home. So it's like the jump, 2021 does not seem that far away in my brain from it, for it to go from 65 to 113 is what you need to make. It's wild.
That's a big difference. I want this, I'll find it later, but this go back in time because the charts go back to like 2012, depends on which one you're looking at, but go back to like, I don't know, like the 80s was fine for me. I feel like referencing things, I mean, maybe that has no validity, but just like, it's interesting. But I think like, oh, you could buy a house for $10,000 in 1972 or 60 something. Like, okay, well, that's cute. That was forever ago. Like everything else was much cheaper, but have some reference to see like, oh, how bad has it gotten? Be nice to know.
Yeah.
Okay. One more. Don't wait to buy a home. This one from Business Insider. That's really what it is. Yeah. Don't wait to buy a home. Would-be home buyers are holding out for lower mortgage rates. That's a huge mistake. There's a lot of affordability talk today. We need to make sure we like shape some marketing around this. We don't have to read what's going on to know what this is going to say, just because we're in this every day.
Yeah.
Don't hold out for lower mortgage rates.
Don't hold out for lower mortgage rates. But also, you know, I think we've talked about in the past, if you are a builder who has special incentives, and if, let's say, resale homes aren't, just keep talking about the benefits, keep talking about the difference, keep talking about what the savings over 30 years will be. If you are running certain incentives, and then just also, just, you know, think of any tools regarding the topics you were seeing in the news too, and how you can create content around that to appease that, because what people see in the news and the headlines does affect their personality and how they go into things and the questions they're going to be asking. So if you can, you know, take even the subject and kind of twist it, like don't wait to buy a home, like, yeah, like, and then post this even would be a great tool of utilizing what other people are also considering. I don't know if you have any other marketing insights for.
Mine is to, if you don't have the book, above my head, there's this book that someone wrote. Uh-oh, making a mess.
Oh, no.
Did y'all
no.
see that? That was some weird thing that my child put up there. It's called Building Certainty by Julie Jarnagin, Content Marketing for Home Builders. I can guarantee you there's a spot in here that talks about how to present this to a buyer, and it's really not found on anyone's website, or it's hidden like in the blog that's not linked from like the top menu anywhere, and so no one actually sees it. That's not a lead. They might see it if they're a lead and they get an email. It's like, hey, new blog post, check it out. It's like, well, we don't have the people that are like before they're a lead. Those people should be educated too and help them out. But I think we should not rely on Business Insider to help push this message. Like we should be doing it ourselves in any way.
Yeah, you'll remember which builder this is, and unless we actually don't even want to mention their name. But what they did is they created a video series. And one of the first things they said is, if you talk to anyone ever, buying a house is the most expensive thing they ever did. Like, we're not trying to lie and say, no, it's not that bad. Like, hey, we know this is a painful experience. We're trying to ease the experience. Here is the a way we help you. And we just, they want to guide. And I think that's what you also have to understand is like the, as a home builder, you know, you have certain things to your advantage, like the home warranty. Like, how do we position the home warranty versus a resale home? How do we create content around letting them know that buying something very expensive is okay? And I think thinking about it that way might also help Andrew in terms of how to create content around it with Julie's book.
And I think the biggest mistake they make around this kind of content is that some builders do create it. Like, you've got a great blog, except talking about how prices will probably go up even if rates go down and how you can repay all these different things, but they post it once and then it disappears forever. Like, nobody's paying attention to your blog. So you constantly have to be going back. How can we distribute that? How can our OSCs use that as a tool? Our on-site use that? How can we share it in different ways? How can we put it out on an e-blast? So I think, like, if you're going to take the time to create good content around this kind of stuff, make sure you're actually using it and people are actually seeing it in multiple ways, because people, you know, they're not in this world all the time, so they only are paying attention when they need it. So you have to keep putting that message out there.
And I think there's a lot to be said to informal content, which I'm going to just say that's anything on social that's not perfectly polished and feels like it's from a company. So the video we referenced in the beginning, I don't know about that person, but if later I saw his content and he's like an HR consultant, I'm like, okay, I related to him this first time. I think I kind of like him. I don't know. Like, he seemed agreeable and enough for me to keep some type of interest in what this person has to say. So I think talking through this on social, if it is too polished, I think people like just mute it out. But if it's someone, it's like, hey, come here and let me show you something real quick. I'm the VP of whatever. Here's my market board. Here's how we price our homes, et cetera, et cetera. If you wait until interest rates are down here, we're going to have 50 people walk through the door versus 20. We'll raise prices because we don't have enough homes to sell. So this is what we do. Remember toilet paper back in COVID? Prices went up, whatever went up, supply and demand. We all know that, right? Interest rates will drive more people through the door. Prices will go up and your home will actually cost more money. Or if you buy sooner rather than later, if it fits your budget, you can refinance later, hopefully, if rates go down. But you're still locked in the home at the lower price. Okay, see you, bye. Like, something that's, the person's in their office, they're professional, they look good. Hopefully their office is nice and tidy and stuff isn't falling off the walls like mine was. But they could do it in a more informal way versus like, hi, this is Andrew, the VP of finance with Peak Homes. Let me talk to you about interest rates. And you're like, oh my gosh.
So if this is too much like advice, Olivia, who edits the podcast, anyone listening, feel free to cut it.
If you made it this far,
you deserve this.
You deserve my rants.
So I know I've talked about it in meetings where it's like the Coca-Cola can with your name on it. So I have it a builder and they're like, yeah, we really just need to get 10 more homes sold. I was like, do you know how many people are interested in those homes? Yeah. I'm like, okay. And what are you doing? Okay. We're running this incentive. Okay. Create videos, like create content for those 10 people, create content around the promotion. Be like, hey, Jeffrey, you want this house at $500,000 right now. It's at this rate nationally. Anywhere else, if you buy this home at this also at this price with our incentive promotion, over 30 years, you are going to be saving X. And look how much lower yours is. So I know you were considering resale homes, but look, in the long run, this house will actually be newer and less affordable than that resale home. And just trying to re-engage them, because that's the content sometimes you need. You need that, I don't know, it's a grassroots, but you need that one-to-one marketing strategy to be created and specific to get those sales and get those closings, and marketing to work alongside sales and to work alongside the promotion team. So you guys are all providing the same message too, and understanding how to utilize that as a tool. So hopefully your reward is worth it. Listening to that tidbit. But if your teams are not kind of on that level, they need to be. They need to have been having those appointments already. Like, this shouldn't be new news to you.
Agreed. I think everyone wants the details this far in the podcast. We could keep going.
We could do like rewards at the end, like congratulations.
Here's some, what they call them, games, like Easter eggs. Easter eggs.
So
let's see here. What else do we have? Current favorites and hates. I'll go really quick because it's easy. I currently have enjoyed playing around with autopilot or self-driving in the Tesla. It's super creepy, but it's very enjoyable. I also hate it because it's terrifying, because it assumes, like, it's AI in action, right? I know as a human, like, that person is jaywalking on this road, because where I'm at, like,
yeah,
the crosswalk is 5 miles down the road. It makes no sense. So everyone jaywalks, whatever. And that person crossed, and I could tell by the body language, all that, like, they're not going any further. Like, they're like relaxed, they're kind of sitting there. But what they did do, as I was driving towards them at a safe distance away, where I would have not touched the brake, what the car did do is like, oh geez, that person's running in the middle of the road. In 15 seconds, I might hit that person. But they just took like a giant step, like they were just adjusting like their stance. I knew they were doing that. The car thought they were taking a step forward, because it was like person moving, stop, and then move it. And then they started to move, but they didn't go on the road. So the Tesla slowed way down. No one was behind me, but I'm like, oh, that could have been like not a good, like, so I could have got ruined it, right? Because it was unexpected. It would no sense for me to slow down.
Yeah.
So it's my favorite, and it's also my hate.
Yeah.
But it's a lot of fun.
Yeah. I think that's what it is. Relying too heavily is scary.
Yeah.
Sometimes when you're like, I know we're in the beta test of like, when my kids are driving, they're gonna be like, what's a steering wheel? So I'm sure it'll be it's gonna be very different. My favorite is cheesy little happy thing. I'm just trying to include my kids in things that make me happy. And so I started like just being like, hey, buddy, we're not building Legos, we're painting with mom. And so and he's like, yeah, let's do this. So he, like, this morning he already set up our watercolor paint station. Aww. He's like, let's draw, can we color eggs with the watercolor paint? I'm like, I don't know, we can find out together. So it's just been nice sharing hobbies now that he's like at that age where it's fun. And today's opening day in baseball, and my husband's like, I'm taking my son, the son and daughter, and doing baseball things with them, because no, thank you. Sorry, anyone who loves baseball, I'm out.
I'm out.
So how about you, Julie?
Yeah, mine is, and I've always been into this, I love thrifting. Like, I know it's a lot of people don't like it, but I love it so much. And I've read two different books recently, and I can't remember which one said it, but it was talking about like how our brain rewards us for, like, why do people run a marathon, and it's the endorphins or whatever you get. And so it was talking about our primitive brains. That's our primitive brains wanting to like forage and go hunt and gather. So now every time, like, I go to the thrift store, it's like, this is just my primitive self wanting to hunt and gather for my tribe.
Okay. So now we'll do a mental health lesson. That chase dopamine, that's ADHD people. And they could constantly feel this need to do without a catalyst. So there we go. There's our mental health lesson today. Mm-hmm. Understanding people have had that. But it's a lot of fun. It's addicting, right? So then it's you put that person, like, on the right path. Like, they are not a risk worker anymore. They are productive. But don't distract them.
Find something
cool. Find the cool things. Find the treasure in anything. Are you hunting for anything? Now I need to know. Like, are you looking for, like, I need those radioactive plates that are like green?
Have
you
seen those? No, it's not like that. I like house stuff, and I like clothes.
So kind of open to anything. You're not collect old denim.
I like to go through. No, it's not like on a hunt for one thing.
Okay.
Like, I like to just be in there a while without my kids. Like, because it's not fun if they're asking to leave. Like, I got to take my time.
Do they want to go with you? Because this is the perfect hobby.
They want some junk. So sometimes I'll have to promise them that I'll bring them something so that they don't come with me.
I was going to say, if they don't like to go, you're like, I have to go thrifting on Thursday night. They're like, okay.
They like to go for 10 minutes and then they're done.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Not fun.
Not fun at all. Well, insert the end intro here. Or wait, should we actually say bye? See you later.
We'll see you. We'll see everyone.
Congratulations. Okay. We'll see y'all later. See you soon.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us on another episode of Market Proof Marketing. Can't wait for the next one? Or looking to connect with other new home marketers? Become a member of our private community, DYC All Access, which is 100% free and always will be. Get exclusive content not shared anywhere else, access to private events, and the ability to join a marketing impact group with other marketers like you around the country. Visit our link in the show notes or members.douyouconvert.com to join. All opinions expressed by me, Andrew Peake, Jackie Lipinski, and our castmates are solely our own opinions. Now get to work and make sure your company is market-proof.